Welcome back to the Business in Sports Discourse. Thank you for joining us today. I'm Matt Chittum here with my co-host, Jason Macaluso. Jason, we were just talking. I was like, all right, stop. We got to stop. We got to have this conversation on the podcast. We're going to talk about Tracksmith today and the bevy, the initiatives that they've done so far in 2020 that are really, really cool. Before we get into it, though, it's funny because I feel like half of our podcasts are really, really positive towards certain organizations or movements or whatever. And then some of them we can get pretty negative on this show, understandably so, if we talk about a certain topic, but it's nice to be positive. I'll just put that out there.
Yeah. And it's funny because I've had this conversation with listeners who are friends of mine, and they're like, wow, you really piled it on this weekend or this conversation. I'm like, yeah, you know, it's not like we're being negative. We're just being realistic. And especially when you bring in the business side of things, it really comes to the surface pretty quick. So I think we're being more realistic. But yes, and having this conversation about Tracksmith, it's cool to actually have a fun, positive conversation about some really good things that this company is doing.
Right. I mean, if we're going to talk about a certain topic that is, you know, there are some negativity around it, we would be, you know, no one wants to hear us talk like, paint with like a, you know, a broad brush or be all vanilla about something. Like, that's no fun. No one wants to listen to that. So it is nice to have at the same time to look at something that an organization like Tracksmith is doing that is a little bit unusual or not the norm or expanding in ways that while replicable by other companies, like stuff that they're not trying at all. And first of all, earlier this year, they announced, and we never formally covered this because this was before the show had started, they formally announced two additions to the Tracksmith organization. That was Nick Willis and Mary Kane, two famous runners, both kind of at disparate ends of their career. Nick Willis has been one of the best middle distance runners in the world for an extended period of time. Mary Kane was a high school phenom here in the United States, then went to the Oregon Project with Alberto Salazar, and then last fall came out with some explosive information that really made the rounds in the running community and then went out way past the running community.
Yeah.
And, you know, both basically two very fascinating people, both within the running world and outside. And they joined the organization in a very unique sponsored athlete way.
Yeah. And they weren't even, their whole mantra was they went amateur, right? Instead of going pro, they went amateur.
Right. And I guess the whole point is that their income is not reliant on their race results.
Yeah, they're basically, I don't want to say glorified ambassadors because that's a really bad way of looking at it, but that's really what they become. But they're employees of the company that it looks like, and correct me if I'm wrong, has very little to do, if anything, with running.
Yeah, I think it hasn't been, you know, within their interviews, they have been pretty open about what they're doing. And it's such a unique thing. Like, part of it is, again, kind of like the very glorified ambassadorship there. They're on some level kind of like a voice within the organization, you know, within kind of the elite running level community. And then the other piece is that obviously if they're doing well in their athletic pursuits, then that brings even more exposure to Tracksmith. But what you see now is kind of a, you know, furthering on down this road of that they announced recently. And I'll just say the name of the initiative because the name is great. It's just the Tracksmith Fellowship Program. I'll just read it right now.
Yeah.
Before we kind of compare and contrast how similar these initiatives are, kind of the road they're going down. So the Tracksmith Fellowship Program, which they announced again last week, running and creativity go hand in hand. The hours we spend on our feet have a way of unlocking ideas that would otherwise be out of reach. As a result, our sport is rich with stories waiting to be told, stories that have the power to both inspire the next generation and grow the sport. And yet, despite this wealth of stories and ideas, it's hard for new voices and new creators to break out. Our goal is to provide a platform for emerging creatives in running, offering both the funds and support needed to pursue a project that will elevate the sport, drive conversation, and empower new perspectives. Tracksmith, come just sponsor the podcast. I mean, why even beat around the bush? You know, we're here. We're waiting for you.
Here we are.
So, you know, but this is going to be about, and some of the initiatives, when they say creativity, that can mean just about anything. The things that they mention in the post are writing, painting, design, illustration, film, music, photography, and others.
Including podcasts. They actually put podcasts in there.
There you go. Yeah. So there are a lot of choices here. What you see ultimately is them continuing to go down the road of trying to really be at the forefront, not just from a retail clothing perspective, but being someone or being a company that is pushing the culture of a niche running environment and trying to leading that charge as opposed to being all things to all people and ultimately becoming a commodity.
You just nailed it. Culture. That's the word they're trying to grow, or that's the word they're, that's a perfect word to describe what they're trying to grow, right? And they are a, you know, again, I'll use your word because they're great. Another great description. They're a niche running company. They're out of Boston, I believe. So local.
Yeah. Right on Boylston.
Okay. So, you know, they're a niche running company. They don't try and be all things to all people. Obviously great clothing company. A lot of runners use them, both professional and amateur, but they don't try and be anything else. So they're really staying in their lane. Wow, so many puns in that sentence.
You're killing it.
You're killing it. Yeah. They're really staying in their lane, right? They're not trying to be, I'm not going to pick on Nike. They're not trying to be like this Nike, this big behemoth. They started with the, you know, hiring Nick Willis and Mary Kane. And then this fellowship program, it's not unorthodox for what runners do, right? Here you are a runner and you've had your podcast for a couple of years. We started this one. A lot of runners now are on social media. They're writers, they're musicians, because when you're out there running or doing endurance sports, you get very creative. It's just the way that our minds think. So again, they're just staying with what falls and into, you know, whatever, everything that people like about running, they are trying to just continue and tie it into their own culture.
And in addition to that, for the Olympic trials, they made this enormous push. And we talked to Lou Serafini about this on the Road to the Olympic Trials podcast, because he was at the forefront of creating this within his job at Tracksmith. Was, I think it was like a third of the people who ran the Olympic trials wore Tracksmith gear. So Tracksmith, you know, people had to apply to get into their Olympic trials program. But they got free gear out of it. It got a little bit of support. And it was just another way of catering to this community of, you know, from my Rimley Runner podcast, I always talk about how it's the dedicated amateur runners. Mm-hmm. That's what the podcast is for. And that's usually who I talk to. The Tracksmith group is probably as much more niche than that. It's kind of like the dedicated amateur or dedicated really, really good amateur runners, right? You know, like you're talking about folks, again, not this painting with too broad a brush, but they really, they're instead of talking about people who are potentially Boston qualifiers someday, their niche are people who are like on the cusp of OTQing or like to run in those circles or like to consume things by those people. And this is just another take on that. This is basically like, all right, we're helping runners achieve their best. We're helping professional runners who want to be part of that kind of community. We're producing extremely high level gear. Again, this is not the $19 shorts that you can buy at Target, right? This is the exact opposite of that, but they are high quality. So, you know, on some level you get what you pay for, and we all have running shirts that we've had for a decade. So maybe that's a good investment for you. And then also you have now kind of the art side of the culture here. So they're really taking a holistic and 360-degree approach to what do people in this very niche running part, the niche within the running community, what do they want to consume and have and feel? And they're trying to basically contribute to every element of that. At least that's how it seems.
Yeah, and the initial announcement with Mary and Nick was pre-COVID. And then the fellowship just came out, like you said, last week. So I don't know if one had to do with, if you know, the fellowship had anything to do with COVID, but regardless, you know, as we're seeing and talking to athletes, whether it was talking to Cody Beals or a lot of the athletes on your program, you know, a lot of these athletes have become social media, they're more on social media now than they are doing any type of running. So they're being out, they're out there and exposed, and not just running and not just endurance sports, but it's everything else that they love to do. So this fellowship program goes right into the wheelhouse of just other creative things that they're doing right now.
Yeah. And from an art and culture part, you know, this isn't exactly a new arena for them. The journal that they've put out on their website, you know, whether it's posts, stories, lookbooks, and films, has always done very, very well. They've had really high level people contribute to that over the years, and they pay them. Right. Right? This is not a volunteer blog or something like that. You know, it's really well done work. So again, this is not new to them. You know, they just might not be, instead of being a depository, repository for the creative work, like they are in their journal, which I would recommend anyone take a look at. It's really well done. Now they're just kind of saying, hey, you put it out in your channels. We're just going to help you. You know, when you look at what they've really created, it's kind of like the business idea of like your least, you know, getting basically the least amount of viable consumers
right
within your business to make it sustainable,
yeah.
Right? Like whether it's 1,000 true fans or even getting farther down, you know, 100 true fans that will spend a lot of money with you. You know, really taking the opposite approach of a commodity and saying, no, this is not for everybody. Doesn't mean we're exclusive, but this is who we're going to target. We're going to go all in and targeting them. And they're really just, instead of saying, hey, our stuff is expensive, and saying, well, how can we lower it for more people? They're saying, no, we're going to be, you know, the BMW or Mercedes or Tesla of, you know, running gear and culture. And that's going to be our place. And it's a very interesting approach for a brand to take and to do so in such a holistic manner.
Yeah, it's the whole quality over quantity. And it's this really only, it doesn't happen in every organization or every sport. I guess it would probably happen more than niche sports like tennis. I don't know anything about tennis, but from a running perspective, you know, as endurance athletes or runners, once you find a piece of gear that fits you perfectly and you could train in that all week, all month, all year, you're loyal to them. So, you know, we've had conversations about shoe companies and, you know, I run in Hokas and they're a nichier company. A lot of, you know, everyday runners don't know about them yet, or they're slowly hearing about them, but kind of like Tracksmith. Once you find something that fits you and you wear it, it wears well, you're willing to spend that extra money. Therefore, you're willing to, you know, make the investment, and they have a, you know, a customer for life.
Right. And I think the other thing too, this is the definition of leaning into your brand.
Right.
You know, yeah. When you have, you know, a lot of people like to talk about rebranding. Or like, oh, what's your brand? And they think about like, some people talk about this sort of stuff. They talk about like color palettes and, you know, the motto for your logo, things like that. Like, no, your brand is when someone sees it, what do they feel? Or another way of putting it is like, if someone's going to describe what your company is or means to them, what do they say? Right. And certainly those elements that I just mentioned can be a part of that, but it's so much more expansive than that. And what Tracksmith is really trying to do, again, is really taking branding to the next level, and not doing it by hiring some branding firm and putting out a flashy new logo with new colors and, hey, look at us, and putting out a nice little PR statement with some Facebook ads. You know, this is much more, you know, branding or enhancing a brand through activity, which I think is a much more compelling way of doing it. And ultimately, I think much more, if done right, more lasting way of doing it.
Yeah, they didn't hire Mary and Nick to just go out there and wear their clothes around the track. They actually hired them for real positions within their organization. One was more of a local ambassador in New York City. One was on the marketing side. But it's more of the fact that they're willing to hire, you know, people that they want part of their culture. And oh, by the way, they happen to be, you know, amazing athletes who represent them as well. So versus the other approach of just paying a lot of money to somebody who might wear their product for a year and then move on to the next company. It seems like by hiring them as real full-time employees that aren't running specific, they're really just taking them in and allowing them to be, you know, more than just a, you know, wear their shorts on the weekend type of person.
Right. Because if you do that, there's nothing wrong with that. And there's plenty of brands who do that. But that's basically like the Amazon approach to running gear,
right?
Which will then at some point become, you know, the lowest price wins. Unless you have like, you know, some name, you know, this is basically taking, you know, you have like the Michael Phelps, or we talked about Nike last time, but Serena Williams or someone like that, where you're like, hey, I identify with this person, so I'm going to wear that gear. Tracksmith hasn't gone that route completely. You know what I mean? Like, no one, again, even in running communities, no one's like, hey, Nick Willis wears that, so I'm going to wear it, right? Unless, like, you're, like, the biggest Nick Willis fan in history, that's just not going to be the way it goes. And it's very similar what you see with you know, on the other coast with what Wazelle is doing. You know, within the women's running community, like, just complete, like, they're trying to put out high-quality stuff that their customers really, really like. But their company is so much more than the retail arm, even though that's the revenue generator, which is so interesting. You would think, like, hey, let's put in all of our efforts around revenue generation since that's what pays the bills. Ultimately, it's so interesting here is that they're saying, you know what? No, we're going to put it around what we believe, and we're going to either fund that or talk about that or highlight that all the time. And like-minded people are then going to be more willing to buy our products because ultimately, is there a huge difference in the products? Maybe a little bit, but is it enough? Maybe not. But what they want to say is we want people to wear our stuff because by wearing our stuff, they're basically signifying to others what they believe and what their, you know, what their morals or their character are. And then that is a potential way to success within that niche market.
Yeah. And it's really thinking long-term. It's not being short-sighted. It's allowing them to survive now when, you know, races are being canceled and pushed into next year. And, you know, I'm sure there's sales are down, but it allows them to be, I'm not going to use the word relevant, but it allows them to not have to all of a sudden just recreate and figure out what their niche is now because something's changed. Even though running has changed right now and, you know, the world has changed, they're not trying to do something different. You know, they bring about this fellowship because it actually works now and it's relevant to the situation, but it's been in their culture to begin with. Unlike, you know, we picked on Under Armour last time because they're just like all of a sudden making these decisions. It seems like daily, weekly, where TrackFitness is taking a longer term approach with it. So this is, you know, it's finally good to have a nice positive story to bring to the forefront.
But it's funny because that's what Under Armour started doing. And that's how they started.
Ironically, yeah, right?
Similar type feel. This is before they went, you know, an inch deep and a mile wide. They had the same sort of feel within like their combat stuff and like their football stuff. Like that was when you wore Under Armour, that was also like a cultural signifier for you. Whereas it really isn't that anymore. And maybe that was a good move for them at some point to broaden the scope. But sometimes it's not. And also the problem with being a one trick pony in terms of sticking within a niche, it's not all, you know, it's not all rainbows, right? Is that if that niche goes down or you make a misstep or something happens, if you have all your eggs in that basket, well, and that basket gets tipped over, then you're in a tough spot. So there are positives, you know, like maybe Under Armour like was made the right choice by diversifying their portfolio. I think there are, it's not whether to do it, oftentimes it's how you do it. But it really is interesting to, you know, we talked about Under Armour last time about how they didn't necessarily go about it the right way. And even though when they started, they did a great job. I mean, that was part of the reason that they built up so quickly.
Yeah, their growth was probably just, you know, they shot up, you know, right away they get into the football scene and then, you know, football is huge, right? So it's a huge sport. They get into collegiate level, the high school level, pros were wearing them. And then it was just part of the culture. And it did make sense for them to step outside of that box. But then I just think they got so huge, they just started dabbling in everything. Plus a publicly traded company.
That's true. You know,
so it's different than right now with,
Let's talk about that. The difference between being a publicly traded company and a private one in terms of being able to plan out for the long term as opposed to looking monthly and quarterly.
Yeah, it's a great question or a great point is, so Under Armour has shareholders, you know, they have board of directors, they have public information that they have to disseminate, they have earnings they have to hit, they have investors they have to keep happy. And if they're not growing, and they're not growing exponentially, and we talked about this with Strava, who's not public, but we, you know, they have some big backers, they have to basically, you know, shoot for the moon every quarter. And if they have an off quarter and there looks like they're not growing on paper, there will be issues. Versus a TrackSmith, you know, I asked you about them because I'm not super familiar with where they are, but being a small little niche company in Boston, You know, right now they're, I don't know deep how deep they go, but right now they're able to just kind of stay nimble and not have to worry about, you know, throwing numbers out there to appease bigger investors.
Right. And the other thing is, just in terms of how they're trying to market themselves, they're doing a lot of this organic marketing through these ventures that they're creating. You know, whether it's, again, having a third of the people running the Olympic trials wearing their gear, you know, which is kind of like a really cool, like, angel investment way of marketing or doing athlete sponsorship. Also, you know, you have, you know, these things we just mentioned. And then from a marketing perspective, it's interesting to see where they put their dollars. I don't know every dollar they spend, but one of their biggest marketing buys recently was sponsoring Revisionist History. Like, that podcast is now, you know, one of their two or three sponsors is Tracksmith. That's a huge price tag. That's one of the biggest podcasts in the country and in the world. And that, again, as someone who works in the podcast space, that's not cheap. That is not a cheap move, but it speaks to the people that they say, all right, who are the folks who are most likely to wear our gear or be positively predisposed to buying into our culture? And that's who they identify. And I think that's a huge signifier for who is already buying into the stuff that they produce. And I think it's just a very interesting move. Again, when you're talking about who would want to be a podcast, who would want to sponsor Revisionist History, all you have to look at is the sponsored content they've put out. So over the winter, they put out sponsored content, 6 episodes on the Revisionist History feed about going into how Lexus makes their cars. And it was a fascinating thing, especially if you're a car person. Looking at all the details that go into each car and the thoughtfulness and all of that. But then that was sponsored content, which kind of leans into the whole idea of, like, Tracksmith being, you know, the Lexus, so to speak, of the running community or running retail community.
That's a really great point that you bring up, especially with Lexus. And, you know, Lexus does not try to be something that they're not. This is who we are. This is what you're going to get when you buy a Lexus. This is what we're going to portray. You know, Tracksmith doing the same thing with Revisionist History, and Malcolm Gladwell being an amazing runner himself. And you have to assume that the people that listen to his show, not that they necessarily have a running background, but they're interested in the same types of things that he is. I think it fits perfectly in the culture that Tracksmith is trying to portray.
Exactly. All right, everybody, thank you so much for listening. If you want more information on what we talked about, go to the Tracksmith website. They do a really good job of keeping all the stuff on there. This is not sponsored content. They are not sponsoring this show.
Not yet.
But, yeah, not yet. Come on, Tracksmith. Drop the bag. No, but it's but all seriousness, I would suggest going to the journal. Their journal website, you'll see the link on the menu page. If you like to read or consume content, they have such good stuff up there. Really, really good writing. Can't say that enough. All right. Thank you, folks, for listening, and have a great day.